So the big question is this: what would you do if money didn't matter? Say you had millions in your bank account, what would you focus on? Would you spend more time with your family, with your wife, with your kids, take family vacations? Would you pursue your gifts and talents and dreams, serve your local community, teach others, serve your church community? You see, if what you would do if money didn't matter is pursue your gifts and talents and dreams to serve others, then that is probably what you should be doing. The problem is, most people are in the rat race, living 5 inches in front of their face with no time to pursue what they were born to do. That is the problem, and the solution is to develop enough passive income to replace your working income so you can quit your job and be free to live your life the way you were created to. That is the solution, and this podcast will show you how. All right, welcome everybody to another awesome episode of Cashflow Dad Life. My name is Ryan Ank, your humble host. And we have with us a really awesome guest today, MC Lobster. I'm just going to read his bio real quick. He's a wealth and investment strategist, a financial educator. He's a president and CEO of Producers Wealth and creator and the host of the popular top-rated business and investing podcast, Cashflow Ninja. A super awesome podcast if any of you guys have a chance to listen to it. I was on the show. It was a lot of fun. And he has interviewed over 300 what he calls cash flow ninjas, people who are out there making passive income, making smart investments. So it's a real honor to have him on the show and to share with us some of the wisdom that he's picked up by interviewing some of the top cash flow ninjas in the world. So MC, welcome to the show.
Ryan, thank you so much for having me. Always a blast connecting with you.
Awesome. Well, before we get started, I need to make a shameless self-promotional plug. Guys, if you haven't gotten my book yet, it's called The 7-Day Real Estate Survival Blueprint, How to Create $10,000 Out of Nothing in Less Than a Month. It's an exact battle plan, an exact strategy on what you can do. Say you're dropped off in a town in the middle of nowhere, and you had 30 days with no money, no experience, no credit to borrow on. What would you do to make sure that you got $10,000 in your pocket at the end of the month? Really awesome book, great exercise to go through. You can claim your free copy at cashflowdadlife.com/7. And all you got to do is cover the shipping costs. So back to our guest today, MC. I'm super intrigued because you have interviewed over 300 people, Robert Kiyosaki being one of them as well. And you were able to, you know, kind of glean and be a sponge and soak up some of their wisdom. What are like the biggest aha moments that you've had on the show?
Yeah, I've been really honored, as you mentioned, to be interviewing these folks and learning from them. And I just write down a bunch of notes as I'm doing it. Every guest is phenomenal, and I learn something from every person I interview. A couple of things that I learned right away is that they don't do the same thing as everyone else, but better. Like you mentioned, Robert Kiyosaki, I've had Kevin Harrington on, and Jim Rogers and Doug Casey and all those folks. They don't do the same thing as everyone else, but better. And they, quite frankly, they really don't do that much different than them. They do the complete opposite. So they're very contrarian. You know, Doug Casey joked the one time with me, said, you know, in every area of your life, if you do the complete opposite as what everyone else is doing, your chances of having success is actually pretty good if you look at the probability of statistics there, which I thought was quite intriguing. But when it comes to wealth, it's the same thing. So one of the things too is from a value standpoint, what they value ideas, they value thoughts, they value concepts, creativity, they value relationships and people. Where I think a lot of the majority of people are just so focused on the things and stuff, right? So for instance, a real estate building, these guys think about things around that real estate building, you know, the contracts of how to structure it properly, how to get creative, the people that are involved, the team, you know, and the relationships around it, because that's what truly makes the asset. It's the intangible. So the big thing is the intangibles that they focus on, and not the stuff. And that's why it's quite amazing to see, like, a lot of them have gone through challenges. You hear about, you know, billionaires or millionaires that lose everything and then they build it back up even faster than, you know, when they lost it the second time around. And I think it's because they're so focused on those intangibles, ideas, creativity, improving themselves, their mental capital, and then also the relationships that end. You know, and then there's just a couple of other things sticking with that theme of doing the complete opposite. Obviously, the name of my show is The Cash Flow Ninja. All of these are folks and guests are cash flow investors. You know, they know that there's many different ways to make an investment profitable, and cash flow being one of them, instead of the accumulation model, which the majority of folks are doing, right? They're focused on strategy too. Strategy is the most important thing. Strategy is what you, is kind of like what and how you do things, right? As opposed to products, which the majority of folks are focusing on. You know, I always joke, Ryan, I'm from South Africa and I love to watch golf. Ernie Els is one of my favorite golfers. The Big Easy, called the Big Easy because of that swing, right? So if you had to offer me Ernie Els's swing or his golf clubs to go play, you know, the Masters at Augusta National, I'm going to take Ernie's swing, right? I don't care about his clubs. I want to be able to hit the ball just like Ernie. You know, maybe I'll take someone else's putting skills. Just kidding, Ernie. But the whole focus needs to be on the overall strategy, how and how you do things, not just what you buy. You know, real estate. A lot of folks have lost money in real estate. People have built empires out of real estate. It isn't the real estate that determined that. It's how they do it, the strategy that they had. It's the same thing with Bitcoin, which is, not in the news as much as it used to be. There's folks that lost everything. They mortgaged their house and everything. And then there's people buying islands in the Caribbean. What's the difference between the two? It's the same vehicle, right? It's all about the strategy. And then also I think the focus too on efficiency versus chasing higher returns. Here's what the majority of folks do. They focus about on 5 to 10% of the money that they have, right? And they try to get a bigger return just on that 5 to 10% of their money. Well, what about the 100% of the money? What about the other 90 to 95% of their money, where these folks make sure that they're efficient in all areas and they focus on the entire collective of their wealth? To give you a good example, what I mean by that too, being efficient as far as where you warehouse your savings, right? How you position your assets and align your assets with your goals, where your income comes from. You mentioned Robert Kiyosaki. The Cash Flow Quadrant is an amazing book where it teaches you on the left-hand side of the Cash Flow Quadrant, it is the E and the S, and on the right-hand side is the B and the I. Income is more efficient from the B and the I than the E and the S, and most efficient from the I quadrant. So they make sure that all these kind of things put together and is integrated. It's not batched in pockets almost of products. The other thing too about being efficient and chasing returns like most people do is a lot of cash flow ninjas know, for instance, by being efficient and saving or reducing your taxes by 20%. Let's just say you reduce your taxes by 20% through restructuring things that you're doing and eliminate paying taxes in the future. What rate of return do you have to get into the marketplace to be able to match that? I mean, there's almost no return out in the marketplace that's going to match just that efficiency that you created. And the other thing too is Cash Flow Ninjas focus. They go all in. They focus and they go all in on certain things. They don't diversify. You know, was it Andrew Carnegie that said, you know, he puts all his eggs in one basket and watches it like a hawk. If you're looking for financial freedom and you're looking to do it through real estate and cash flow through real estate, then why are you playing around with penny stock? Why is there, you know, 10 different other things that you're doing? If you want to get to your goal, focus, zone in on that goal and go all in. That's one thing too. I read a lot, and that's the one thing that stands out constantly is about how these guys that are successful and do it, they found something, they skill up, they immerse themselves in it, and they go all in. Perfect example, guy in the news lately, fellow South African Elon Musk. He goes all in every single time on every single thing, regardless of what you think of him. And then the other thing is too, knowing the rules. Cash flow ninjas know the rules of money. Most people don't realize that there's rules to money, and the rules of money changes constantly. The last big change was in 1971 when Richard Nixon closed the gold window. after that, basically, we've had a bunch of floating fiat currencies circulating the globe. So money is simply a medium of exchange and a representation of value. It's not a store of value. So a lot of cash flow ninjas know that they need to keep their money working for them and moving, right? And increase the speed and the velocity of which their money is circling through assets, creating cash flow and coming back into their own economy, where the average person, unaware of these rules, unaware of what's going on, what do? They park their money. They park their money in retirement plans. And the people that they park their money with that know the rules, they turn it over and over and over. Big banks and financial institutions do it. So those are some of the things. I knew I threw out a whole bunch of them. The other quick thing, last thing that I'll add to is the big picture view, the long-term thinking and range of thinking, right? I think, you know, we are so focused just on short-term things in our lives, right? And our attention span is very short. Let's be honest. We collectively probably have less of an attention span of a gnat, right? Long-term thinking, cash flow ninjas think in 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, and then also in generations. What's happening to the next generation? What legacy are you leaving for your children? What legacy are you leaving for your family and so forth? So it's a learning experience, and I keep learning and loving it.
That's awesome. There is a ton of gems in what you just went through. And I hope the listeners have an opportunity to go back through this and pause it and rewind it and really write those down and think on each one of those, because there's a lot of gems in what you just said. Going and staying with this idea of, you know, the top producing cash flow ninjas in the world pretty much do the opposite of what everybody else does. One of the first things that come to my mind is our modern education. Can you touch on how they feel about our modern education?
Oh, it's so, our education system is so broken. It's sad to see, but very outdated. So, it was really an industrial age model and built on the Prussian school system model out of Prussia, which is now part of Germany. But basically, the goal of that school system was to produce workers that could work in the factories, and then also soldiers, right? Because there was a lot of threats and a lot of wars starting to brew up as the industries increased in these countries. So we still haven't changed. I mean, if you look at school systems today, first of all, most schools look like a prison from the outside. if you just drive past it, it doesn't look like a very friendly and warm and fuzzy place. And secondly, I mean, they still have bells ringing, telling people when to get up and change classrooms and take a lunch break, right? Just like they do in factories. But really, I think, Ryan, that the school system and what a lot of the cash flow ninjas have shared on my show too, is it really doesn't prepare people for the economy that's out there, being that it's based on this industrial age model. We're now in the information age. Teaching computer classes in school does not prepare you for this new economy. We're in a skills economy, back to a skills economy. We're no longer in a jobs economy. And these schools and most universities too prepare people for employment and jobs. And most of them, which really wouldn't even exist by the time that they graduate universities and or graduate high school. So education, really, there's different types of education that folks, I think, don't really think about. I mean, there's academic, there's professional, and there's financial education. Sure, you can pick up some academic education. There's professional education. Obviously, if you're going to pursue a profession and you go to university to become an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer, you know, I'm not saying that's going to be a waste of your time, because that still is teaching a high income skill set and skills that are needed in the economy that still the marketplace demands, right? But if you're going there for something studies, a bachelor in something studies degree, I mean, it's just not going to prepare you for what's going on. There's so much education right now that you can learn online, skills. I love it because some of the older books that I've read, it's so great how people talk about how they had mentors. You know, Benjamin Franklin, for instance, talked about it where he learned and studied under someone, right? And then he did his own thing, and then he gave back and someone studied under him. It's that kind of that apprentice sort of model, right? And I think that's coming back because it's skills based. It's learning skills from someone that's actually doing it. Most college professors are not, they've never done the stuff that they teach, in universities. So I think that's exciting to see that that's coming back. But the education system is ready for a complete disruption. It's already been disrupted, I think. There's massive disruption coming. And I think for people that are even listening, I can see this is like another $1 billion industry online. Just as the e-commerce one, for instance, that where there's a ton of opportunity, where if you could provide or build a platform that are teaching skills that will actually empower people that the marketplace need, I think people are going to do really, really well disrupting that.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, if I look at, what education had cost me, it was about $20,000 a year for college education. And yeah. I think the norm is above that now. That was like, 15 years ago. So I think the norm is like 26,000 or 30,000 for college education. And you graduate and you don't have anything but a promise that this degree is going to get you a job. Is it in a cubicle somewhere? What are the skills that you're going to learn? And massive disruption in the industries because a lot of stuff computers are taking over. People with creativity are taking over some people's entire jobs. And on the flip side, you've got stuff out there that's being created now, like massive education online, where it doesn't cost you $20,000. It might cost you $1,000 or $2,000. And you learn skills that produce $20,000 a year, or save $20,000 a year. So I think the educational thing, anybody with foresight who's got kids about to go to college has got to think to themselves, what's going to be the greatest return on investment for this education? So what would you say is like the solution to the school system? I mean, to revamp, what needs to happen in order for people to wake up and say, we need to do away with the bell? We need to do something else.
Yeah, look, this is like the big T-Rex, right? It's not going to go quietly, and it's going to swing its tail and knock a bunch of stuff over because you're going to anger it, and it's also most likely going to eat a lot of people in the process. Yeah. So I think what's the solution? The solution is taking it back to the individual level and have people taking responsibility for their own education. And have parents take responsibility for the education of their children. Because I think what a lot of folks do is basically just throwing their kids in school and hoping that they're going to turn out okay on the other end, right? Or just going to school, even if you're younger, and thinking that this is going to be it. No, that's not education. You have to take it back and start it at the individual level by studying things that you're interested in, reading wide, and also trying to figure out how you can learn skill sets that the marketplace desires. So I would say the solution is to take accountability and responsibility and start it on the individual level. And then from an entrepreneurial level, I think there's going to be a lot of entrepreneurs in this space. There's already some of them. Just look at even the Khan Academy. I mean, those guys are doing well. And I'm just throwing out a name just because that's top of mind. It might not be the best example, but there's other platforms. Creative Live is one that's there. There's a ton of stuff already available online. Most, by the way, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, a lot of these Stanford, a lot of these Ivy schools, they post courses for free on a lot of different platforms. So it's there. You just have to be accountable for your own education. And I think this whole mindset thing that a piece of paper on your wall is the end goal, that needs to change. That's not the end goal. The end goal should be learning a skill set that you could go out in the marketplace to produce and create value for other folks. So I think if I was a young person, guy or gal, I would look at number one, a lifestyle, a life by design or default. That's the first thing. So a lifestyle by design, you've got to think about it. You're going to think, well, I'm going to spend 4 years and go to college doing what? What am I going to learn? What do I want to do? What is it going to be better for me to travel first and maybe learn things on my own and go into the workplace to figure out what I want to do? college and university is not, it's a very expensive place to try and figure out what you want to do with your life. And then make sure that the juice is worth the squeeze. You know, if you're passionate about going into the medical profession, for instance, there's a high income skill set that you're going to be able to learn in college. Same with being a lawyer or engineer or, you know, very, very specific niches. But I would say then do it by a life by design, not by default. Just don't go to college and run, rack up a bunch of debt because everybody else is doing it. And that's what, you know, your parents have been telling you to do, because the life that your parents grew up, by the way, doesn't exist anymore. The life that my parents grew up in doesn't exist anymore. My grandparents didn't exist anymore. And the life that my children will grow up in, you know, the life that I grew up in doesn't exist anymore. I mean, I only got an email address in 2001, being from South Africa. So take it from there.
Right. You know, I think one of the most important things that you shared was, you know, the focus on developing a skill set. And I think that, you know, that is one thing that is so overlooked by especially young people graduating from college. You know, as a business owner and a small business owner, you know, you got these kids, and I've had this experience, you got these, I say kids, I mean, they're adults graduating from college, and they get a job for a year, and then they ask for a raise. And you have to think as a business owner, why would I pay them more if they're not going to bring any more money into the company? What am I paying them more for? And a lot of people don't think like a business owner. They don't think return on investment, you know, return on spend. And so I think that's a critical thing for especially young people to understand is to when they're, if they do go that route and they are employed somewhere, what sort of value are they really providing? What can they bring into the company? But more than that, I would encourage people not to work for someone else and to remove that mindset. But let's change gears real quick. Let's talk about strategy. You mentioned the whole idea of, you know, having, would you rather his golf clubs or would you rather his swing?
Yeah.
And so many people, they want just the quick fix. You know, they want something where they can buy it, it's done for you, and they don't have to think, they don't have to strategize. Can you tell us what the wealthiest people in the world are doing to strategize wealth creation?
Yeah, so a strategy would include, and a good, solid strategy would include, if you sit down and you're trying to map it out, would include you being right at the top as the number one asset. You know, taking accountability for everything, being responsible for everything that's happened in your life and being responsible for everything that will happen. You are the number one and greatest asset that you will ever have. You know, I've said that many, many different times, and I can't say it enough because I think it all starts with you. So you are the creator, by the way, of assets and inflows, whether it be financial capital, whether it be relationships and so forth into your life. So something is just, it's just there. A piece of real estate is just a piece of real estate. A piece of gold and silver is just, you know, it's just gold and silver. An asset class is just an asset class. You're the one that creates the asset or actually makes, determines whether it's an asset or liability. What did Robert Kiyosaki said? We mentioned his name before. He said, you know, the risk isn't in the investment, it's in the investor. So the second thing is the biggest investment that you should always make is in yourself and then in your relationships, and then invest in things that you know about, you know, like, and that you study, you read around your strengths. You know, if you are an absolute crypto ninja, just using that as an example, and you know what's going on in those markets and you trade, I don't, I'm not a good trader, but if that's your unique skill and you know nothing about real estate, then that's probably not a good thing for you to move over to do, and vice versa. If you're a good real estate investor, jumping into other areas that you don't know anything about puts you in the bucket as being a speculator. The other thing too is having control. These cash flow ninjas have control. So markets go up, down, and sideways. You know, it's, you know, I think it was Warren Buffett that always jokes about it. They ask him, you know, sir, what do you think the markets are going to do? And he goes, well, they only do three things all the time. They go up, they go down, and they go sideways. So it'll be one of those three things, right? Do you have control over those? No, you don't. But so you need a strategy that positions you in all three scenarios to profit. Alignment and focus. Are you aligned with your philosophy, your core beliefs, your principles and values? And then also, are your resources aligned to where you want to go? If I want to drive from New York City to Los Angeles, do I have everything that I need from to get me from New York to LA? Right? Do I have the right car? Is my trip plan? Am I going in the right direction? The GPS. Now, is everything else aligned with that? You know, it's interesting to see folks want to create financial freedom through real estate because that's what they've heard, and then all of a sudden they're speculating in certain stocks here, and I've got many of these different little buckets. Get it all aligned to push you closer to your goal. That's what cash flow ninjas do. I touched on efficiency, where you warehouse your savings, asset positioning, your income, protection. You know, they're more interested in preserving and protecting what they have. You know, Ryan, I always joke and say the money game is really easy if you think about it. You have to make money, you have to protect money, and you have to multiply money. So a lot of people go straight from making to trying to multiply it, but they never figure in the protection. So these guys know how, I've mentioned Buffett, all these guys, they know how to protect their downside, right? You know, the stock market just dropped 1,000 points, and there's obviously Buffett has got positions, and then folks are like, oh, I think he lost a bunch of money. And I'm like, you think that guy doesn't protect himself with options? You think Buffett goes, has these $1 billion of positions in a market that's very volatile, and he doesn't know how to protect himself? He probably profited from that. Risk management is key. You know, I'm from South Africa. So political, there's a lot of risk to manage. Political risk is a big one. Economic is a big one. Market is one. And then institution, not just where your money's at, but who your money's worth too. Dollar maximization in a strategy, $1 doing many different jobs for you. So be very, very aware of that. You know, we don't just want one job for every single dollar in our overall strategy. We want $1 working as hard as it possibly can, but doing many different things. So we talk about, you know, I'm a former rugby player and I still coach. So I talk about protective things that you do on the field. There's a protection side, there's a defensive side, and there's offensive. Can $1 do all three of those things in your strategy? Then momentum, if you've protected, you've managed risk, you've got all these things going. Now there's uninterrupted compounding, and then also multiplication. And then flexibility, because you're going to need flexibility in any strategy, whether you're a real estate investor, whether you're an investor in businesses and companies, you're going to need flexibility to adapt and change. You know, Mike Tyson talks about what, you know, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. Maybe you have a plan and then something happens. You have to be flexible enough to make changes and adapt and course correct within a strategy. So that's what I'll throw in, you know, when you're thinking of building and creating a strategy for yourself and your family.
Yeah. Once again, this is something to go back to, rewind, pause, and let each of those ideas sink in. You know, probably one of the biggest things that I've gleaned from what you said is to focus on one thing. And to focus on the things that you're good at. And instead of spreading yourself thin and spreading yourself all over the place, the top cash flow ninjas in the world, they go deep and then they go wide, you know, and they continue to focus and hone in on their skills instead of, like you say, the one of the most popular notions out there is to diversify.
Right.
It's actually surprising to learn that most of the, you know, richest people in the world don't diversify. They go all in and they get really good at it. And then they go out from there.
Yeah. The quotes are all over the internet too. If you just look up what some of these guys have said, and some of them are really harsh. I mean, like what did Mark Cuban say? Diversification is for idiots, right? And Buffett, it's like for people that don't know what they're doing. So it's like, there's some harsh quotes. So these guys are pretty passionate about going all in. The other thing that I'll just also add to that is, you'd mentioned about knowing what your strengths are and focusing on that and zoning in on that. This is one thing that I learned too on my journey, is that a lot of these cash flow ninjas, if they find something that they're not good at, they don't spend the majority of time to try and get good at that thing that they're not good at. They focus on what they're good at, and then they bring in a partner or a team member to do the things that they're not good at. So that's also very hard for folks to do. And it has been for me, right? Because you always figured, you know, well, I've got to learn this or learn more about it. No, they stay in their lane. They know what they're good at. And then they find other folks to partner with to do that.
Yeah. You look around at what you don't have, and then you find other people to fill that spot instead of trying to learn it on your own.
Yep. Absolutely.
So you have recently created a course. Can you tell us a little bit about what that course covers and what people can learn from it?
Absolutely. The course is called the Holistic Wealth Creation Course, and it takes an approach of holistic wealth creation and a holistic wealth strategy. And it's basically taking you from step one all the way to where you have a strategy up and running to invest in real estate and in businesses. So we cover a whole bunch of stuff from why people struggle financially is a big one, right? That we look at that. We look at some of the middle class traps, the biggest financial traps that's out there. Then we look at the importance of understanding your changing environment. And then we also look at how to build strategies. We look at a lot of the different cash flow ninjas and what they do. And then also we talk about cash flow banking, a strategy that I know that you're familiar with, used in a lot of these family offices that integrate vehicles and asset classes. For instance, using whole life insurance and integrating that with real estate investments through cash flow banking strategy. So we show people how that's done, and then how to integrate many other different vehicles with one another as part of this overall strategy. And then there's also a little bit more higher level stuff once you've got all the building blocks in place. But I would say, it's personal finance for investors and entrepreneurs and business owners. And we take it from the first step, because I think a lot of people know that maybe they're not where they want to be, right? They're not where they want to be with regards to their financial life, right? And they know that there's something better, and they've read a lot of books, they've taken courses, but they have no idea what to do next. So we take it from here's the whole situation, and here's why people are in the situation that they're in. And then we basically give them a step-by-step instruction through this course of how to turn the boat around, or the bus around, as I would usually say, get the right people on the bus and now go someplace special, right?
Yeah, awesome. So we'll put the link to your course up on our website. It'll be cashflowdadlife.com, and then go to the resource page. And then from there, you'll get to see MC's course. Obviously, if you've listened to this podcast, you know that this guy's got a lot of valuable stuff to say and a lot of wisdom to glean from. His course is that much more valuable. I know of people who are saved $2,000 a month just from taking this course. And the course is free right now on iTunes. And it won't be for very long, so get it right now while it's free. But again, you can go to cashflowdadlife.com/resources in order to find this course. Now, one thing I want to touch on before we go is cash flow banking.
Yep.
And kind of sticking with the theme that we've talked about, there's some popular educators and gurus out there. Now, cash flow banking is all about using like a wholesale term policy in order to protect your money and to basically use that as and make it become your own bank.
Yes.
However, there are people out there, some very popular educators like Dave Ramsey, Mary Hunt, financial educators that pretty much say that anything beyond term life insurance is for fools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know in my area of expertise in real estate, sometimes I'll talk about using credit cards as a way to purchase real estate. And there's people out there that are like, if you use credit cards, if you use debt to purchase real estate, you're a fool. And for me, it's for the simple-minded, you know, it's for people who don't see, they just see either black or white, but they don't see an entire strategy that encompasses every single nuance to that, because there's ways to do it to make sure that your ROI is good, to make sure that you're protected, that you're not coming, you know, there's all kinds of ways to do it that make it very smart. Is the cash flow banking very similar to that? Because you've got a lot of people out there that are saying it's a foolish thing to do, period, to use a whole life insurance policy.
Yeah, so dividend paying whole life insurance policy with a mutual insurance company is what we use for cash flow banking. And to answer your question, Dave Ramsey doesn't like it. Susie Orman has said something about it. And there's other folks about it too. And they're right. You know, I think Dave Ramsey has said, you know, a whole life, or Susie Orman has said something that it could be the worst place to put your money ever. And I don't disagree with them. They're right. It's just not the full truth, the full story. And again, that's focusing on the product. So the cookie cutter whole life insurance that the majority of the public buy at retail level is not a good investment, because insurance is never an investment to begin with. It's a savings vehicle. So when they say it's a horrible place to put your money as an investment compares to mutual funds, well, number one, it's, you know, the cookie cutter that the public buy at retail level is horribly structured. They are overpaying for insurance costs. And, you know, I can go on and on and on. And number two, it's not an investment. It's a savings vehicle. So the way that we structure it is part of an overall strategy. And you absolutely nailed it. You just summed it up really well. It's part of an overall strategy. So I always say, you know, here's a little bit of critical thinking, I think, that goes into it. So if family offices are using cash flow banking, integrating that with their businesses and real estate investments and so forth. And these are families, for folks that are not familiar with family offices, you know, when families have approximate net worths around $250 million and up, they bring it into all their advisors under one room, because mistakes, if your asset protection guy is not speaking to your CPA or your tax guy, right? There's a lot of zeros behind mistakes and miscommunication. So they bring them all into one firm that manages the money of the family. So they use cash flow banking as part of strategies, and the core of their strategies in a lot of these family offices. So they're doing it and doing it very, very powerful. Now, what's the difference between them doing it and then the average guy on the street that's buying a retail policy from his brother-in-law, you know, that Dave Ramsey or Susie Orman talks about? And both are whole life insurance vehicles. So what's the difference? And it's all about strategy. So you've got to set it up with the right person, with the right company, and structure it a very specific way, and then integrate it as part of an overall strategy. So a whole life insurance vehicle, even if it's structured correctly, it's a great place to save your money until you deploy it. It's a great vehicle for legacy planning, for saving for university or colleges for your children and so forth. But it just is still, it's just still a whole life insurance policy, right? How do you use it? How do you integrate it? Where does it fit into your overall strategy? So I think that's what they miss, because Dave and Susie and a lot of the financial entertainers, look, they have their different avatars and their different crowds. So they're very product focused. So they speak about product in isolation. And I mean, you could say the same thing about any single financial product that we could rip apart, you and me here, if we go through the line, if we look at the word, you know, just on base by itself. You know, I'm not a stock guy. I haven't been in stock market for years. I think it's a horrible place to have your money. But do people make money there? Absolutely, because they have a strategy. They know what they're doing. It's in line with what they know and how they use it. So whole life insurance and integrating it with investments is the same thing. Gives you a lot of control, protects your principal, tax-free growth, provides a death benefit. I mean, it's a private investment, so it's an invisible financial instrument. It has asset protection. There's flexibility. I mean, I could go on and on about it. It could be a great place, just like a real estate investment could be a great investment, or it could be a horrible place, just like a real estate investment could be a horrible investment.
Right. Yeah. No, it's you know, it is one of those things where one-dimensional thinkers can easily put it in the box as, oh, well, this is bad because Susie Orman and Dave Ramsey said it was bad. I get that too with debt, with real estate. Well, it's... Mm-hmm. Well, there's good debt and there's bad debt, you know, debt that you're paying yourself, but you've got someone else paying off your debt. What are you doing? You're tremendously growing your net worth.
So. Absolutely. And by the way, both of those, and this is what I usually say to a lot of people too, is you have to have your house in order financially too, and invest in yourself and your education before you do certain things, right? Dave, for instance, picking on him, he does a great, if your financial life is a complete train wreck and a complete mess, and you're spending more than what you're making and all that stuff, his stuff can help you to get your house in order, right? So you have to have your house in order, the same way of using debt in real estate. If you're a financial mess and you start leveraging a bunch of debt and credit cards with real estate, that can destroy you, the same way of setting up a cash flow banking policy and then trying, you know, these strategies could destroy you financially if you don't have the fundamental building block and you don't have, you don't have your financial ducks in a row.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this has been an awesome interview. I mean, we've covered a lot. We've gleaned some of the secrets of the richest cash flow ninjas in the world. It's always awesome to not only interview those people and get that wisdom. But it's even better when you can get the clip notes, you know, and
absolutely
like this. So I really appreciate you coming out. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners?
No, I just thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate the time and the opportunity. One final thing that I'd share that I also learned from interviewing these cash flow ninjas, and it's actually a person that I regard as a mentor shared this, is that the wealth formula that he uses and that I try to implement in my life every day is your mental capital times your relationship capital equals your financial capital. So it starts with your mental capital, what you learn, what you're studying, what you know, what you read, courses you take, investing in yourself, and then also who you spend the most time with, right? Jim Rohn has that quote that you turn into the average of the five people that you spend the most amount of time with and have the average income of the five people that you spend the most amount of time with. And then also your network, your mentors, your coaches, your team and so forth, that will get you the financial capital in the end. So that's changed my life. I do an inventory on both of those areas every quarter to see where I need to develop, where I need to grow, what do I need to learn, who do I need to meet to get what I want financially. So I'll finish off with that for you.
That's awesome. And that's everybody's choice who they hang out with too. So
absolutely.
What they spend their time with. Mentorship doesn't necessarily need to be a one-on-one guy, although that's nice to have. Mentorship can just be the books that you're picking up. So it's awesome. Thank you absolutely. So much, MC, for taking your time out and sharing all your wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ryan.
And take care.
Boom! Thanks for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You're going to want to listen to every episode as soon as it comes out, because each episode has in it an idea or a strategy that could literally change your life. And listen, don't miss out on the free investor tools that I have for you on my website, cashflowdadlife.com. So go to cashflowdadlife.com and get your free swag. And listen, hit me up if you want to talk about how we can get you out of the rat race as soon as possible. Until next time, my name is Ryan Anke, and this was Cashflow Dad Life.